Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This is a CC Radio podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling. Like, you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe, Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFOradio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review, or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that would help us grow. Tonight, I'm joined by Glenn again, and many of you would have listened to last episode and realized that that was probably a bit too much for one episode. So we've got Glenn on again to continue his story. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Cade.
It's great to have you back, mate.
Yep, thank you. So just you want me to continue on where I was last time, basically?
Yeah, pretty much. So last time you're on the show, we kind of left it at a little bit of a cliffhanger with you leading into the possession part of your experiences. And I guess what we'll do is we'll just continue from that point, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no worries. All right. So what happened was we're in the middle of the activity. Luca was moving roughly in 9-day cycles. We're not talking about minor moves. We're talking about pretty severe moves. He turned his head almost 90 degrees and often looked towards where my wife would sit. With the fly infestation just increased. It was absolutely crazy in the house with flies. We just couldn't get rid of them. The only time we could have a break from them was at night time, and we could spray them. And we'd normally kill them, and by the morning they'd be back again, regardless. Other stuff that was going on, we had our bed would shake, which still happens from time to time. Smell pipe smoke, knocking in the middle of the night, which I got a video on YouTube showing that. We'd come open, get up in the morning, all the kitchen doors would be open. The back door started bursting open in the middle of the night. The thing would just fly open. Often we were awake, and sometimes in the middle of the night it was locked and it would just burst open.
Really?
We had, we had it locked. It was always locked, and the thing would just fly open with a loud bang, like quite a bit of force.
Did that ever make you think that there was people in the house?
No, because the way the house was, and because we had dogs, it was near impossible for someone to get in there. We would have been alerted by the dogs straight away if anyone got into the house. And the door was opening. We worked out it was more or less, I don't know, opening from the inside. That's what we sort of worked out. We came to the conclusion after, because we just kept locking it, and just out of the blue, it just burst open again.
And when the door is locked like that, you can only open it from one side unless there's a key.
Yeah, that's right. There was no way. And there was a screen door open to open too, so you could hear that screen door if it opened. That screen door never opened, but the locked door would just fly open with a loud bang. It was quite common in there. The other thing we had was we had this wind. It still happens here every now and then, actually. We're in a different house, but it'd be the middle of the night. You'd be trying to sleep, and it would just rip through the room, absolutely rip through like a mini tornado. And you'd hear stuff go flying everywhere, bashing and banging, and you'd think the room would be trashed, and you'd get up in the morning and nothing would be touched. And that was on top of when this other entity, used to come around and have the sleep paralysis. First sign that was around the room would go ice cold, so it'd be sweltering in summer and then would be absolutely freezing when this thing came around in the room. It was ice cold just before the sleep paralysis. I'm just trying to think of the other stuff that happened. We had so much stuff. We had the children's voices. Often we'd get touched, like tapping to wake up, you know, to wake us up. I've been woken up a few times by something waking me up, literally, and stuff like that. Not all of it was bad. I've had instances in the car and actually at home where the clock radio would turn on and play your favourite song and then turn off again and stuff like that. So there was definitely something friendly amongst all this at this stage as well.
Because one of the things that we spoke about, and this was before we went on the air, is that you got an investigation team around to, I guess, look at Luca, this possessed doll. And
yes,
it was asked how many people or how many spirits are possessing you. And And you said the answer was quite high.
Yeah, I've got the video on YouTube. You can see the response. He says, it was the first investigation team come around. They came in not too high tech, just with spirit boxes. We got a lot of swearing and abuse out of one of the rooms. There was a cupboard in my son's room where you see some red eyes and the cupboard door would always open, which, still happening here. We've got a cupboard, sliding cupboard doors open. And it was, you can hear the swearing. It's going F you, going off, you know, that's in one of the videos. But with Luca, he asked, we turned all the power off to the house. The EMF meter is going off absolutely maximum with Luca. It's just fluctuating, absolutely crazy. He said he was talking to Luca. And the first thing I heard when he turned the box on, he was asking, is there anyone here? But you can't hear it in the video. You hear me react to it. And the spirit box says he wants to talk to us. Us, plural. And then they asked Luca, they said, how many spirits are here? And he answered, 600,000. And the response came more or less straight away when he asked. The video is on YouTube. You can hear it quite clearly. But Luke and the investigator says, I think you're pulling my leg. I don't think there's that many. And I think he answers with another number after that. I think like 36 or something. I don't remember because it's, That part's a little bit harder to hear.
And I think the 36 might be a little bit believable because, I mean, when it comes to this type of stuff, it wouldn't surprise me that they lie, that they try to deceive you because, I mean, it's all a game. Do you think that the 36 spirits is a little bit closer to the correct answer? Because are you experiencing that many different types of events within this house?
I'm still at a loss about this. I think it's closer to 36. I just don't know. I can't make sense of it. Just when I think I've got it worked out, something else changes. The only thing I'm really sure about is with Luca. Luca was either already possessed when we got him because when we got him off the old man, his wife died. She was telling him. His adult children didn't want him, and he was willing to practically give us Luca, who cost him over $1,200 for free. He only won $70. He was going to give Luca to us for free, but we said, here, take the money. But either that or he became possessed here, I just don't know. I really don't know on that respect, but all I'm sure is Luca is separate to what's going on. He's totally separate to everything else. And another thing is a jester. When he's talking about the 600,000 spirits, he's basically a clown. So he's joking around. I just think that's just his personality.
So you believe that your house is haunted and
and Luke is just there and he is potentially increasing the activity in there?
I don't think he's increasing the activity. I think he's watching over everything. I think he's, because what happened was when he started turning his head, he started to turn where my wife and look at where my wife used to sit constantly. His attention was focused on her.
And is there a reason for that?
Well, yeah, she was starting to become possessed, basically.
Your wife was?
Yes.
What do you think was possessing her?
Well, whatever the bad thing was in the house, there's definitely something bad. There's something bad. It's still here. I've recorded his voice. I've got it in another video. I've actually got his voice on tape. It's still here. It's so are the rest of them. They're just semi-dormant at the moment.
So how did you start to realise that your wife was becoming possessed? Because it sounds like it may have been a very gradual thing. So do you think your wife was fighting this possession for quite a while, or do you think this is something that just kind of happened overnight?
No. The way it goes is it's a gradual thing. The person will seem quite normal. It's inside the head the person goes. You don't, the thoughts and all the rest of it. And then you gradually see other signs very gradually. Then all of a sudden, the way it happens for us, it's bang. The change is, it's complete, it's just gone. The old person is gone and the new thing possessing is there. But you still get traits of the old person coming through from time to time until they get the strength to fight it.
So is that something that you might want to go through and tell us a little bit more, I guess, the possession of your wife?
Yeah. Do you want me to go back to the story about when I had these people in and, yeah, when I made this mistake?
Yeah.
It's a little irrelevant, yeah. We had this ghost team in, they done the spirit box, they got results and all the rest, and they said they'll come back, they never did. So I got another team in, they went in high tech, absolutely high tech, cameras everywhere and the whole works. Things were getting quiet there at first, and so I said to them, do you want me to see if I can get this thing to react? And they said, yep, go for it. So we went in with one bloke who had a camera, another one had a recorder, and I think it was about four of us went into the house. So I said, do you want me to do this? And they said, yep, do it. So I swore at it. I told it, they'll never take me, because with everything that had been going on in the past, like me and these mystery illnesses and all the rest, it looked like it wanted me. Anyway, I told them, I'm strong, you will never get me. Because with possession, as far as I know, you have to somehow give this thing permission to get into you, subconsciously, consciously, whatever. So I swore at it and I told it was weak. I said, it'll never have me and all the rest. So it done the next best thing. It took my wife. That's how.
Do you think you're responsible for that?
Well, looking back, I think it already had started with her. Slowly, there was looking back, some things we found later, it was already slowly, gradually, very gradually started. But because I'd done that, I think it was hell bent then of finishing the job on her. Yeah.
Did you ever see signs that other family members in that house were maybe being affected by it?
Yeah, massive mood swings, irrational behaviour, sure. It wore us down, the whole family. We were worn down financially, family-wise, everything. But having said that, we weren't at each other's throats or anything like that, but there's just be really strange instances here and there, then things will go quiet and back to normal again. That's why the haunting was going on. I forgot to add, when I had a go at this thing, the cameraman was grabbed by the scruff of the neck and held up, and he ended up panicking and ran out of the house because it had him. I don't know 100% sure if I was responsible for it or not, but I definitely didn't help things by doing it, you know. But having said that, yeah, if by standing up to it, it definitely didn't take me, but I didn't think at the time it was going to take someone else.
So what was the outcome from that investigation? Because it sounds like that the like you said, the investigators, they almost wanted no part of this after this happened.
Yeah, well, after the investigation, things ramped up. They heard the little kids' voices. After I'd done that, things ramped up. They heard the little kids' voices. They were basically chasing these apparitional hounds, cold spots. It really started things heat up after I'd done that. After they left, well, packing up, they had people pulling on their camera cords, you know, touching them and just harassing everyone who was there. And I had several of the people that were there. They said to me, that's the best house that we've ever been to. I want to come back here and do it again. We've never had so much activity before. And then after that, that group disappeared. And basically, I never heard from them again. They were supposed to give me a report and everything. I never heard from them ever again, except for the fella that was grabbed. He was talking to me on Facebook one day. And I think I sent you a screenshot of that.
So did you ever have investigators come back?
After my wife went missing, I had one lot there. They didn't really find anything other than the room. We had a room which, if you put a camera on, you know, you see the orbs floating around?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the difference was I've caught this in the past, but I've lost the video of it because Luca destroyed my computers and, you know, and all the rest. There's one room we'd put a camera on, and instead of having orbs floating around, there'd be hundreds of them, and they'd be just swirling like a little mini tornado in this one room. So this is the room we used to hear the kids' voices come from the most, and the kids singing the nursery rhymes. Anyway, we blocked all the windows up, checked for everything for air source and all the rest, and stuck a camera in again, and sure as hell, yep, it was just swirling. Just hundreds of orbs swirling in this one room everywhere. There are no fans on, no aircon, you know. It was absolutely crazy in this one room for some reason.
And do you ever take that as a bad sign or anything like that?
I don't know. I don't know if it ties in what tools that some of the investigators have told me that there's a vortex in it. Vortex portal in the house, I reckon. They reckon that they're coming through there. It's using the house that's come in and out of the house. That's why we've got these weird spirits and we can't keep track of them. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm a skeptical believer. So, yeah, I don't really get into that side of things.
So you said that your wife went missing. Did she go missing because of her possession?
Yes, pretty much. I'll tell you what happened. You know, after a while, she started showing external signs, and this was very gradual, right? She was always hot, no matter what, always hot. She could never, ever cool down, ever. And then she just basically stopped sleeping up all night, wouldn't sleep. And then after a while, she started with really blank stares. They were just emotionless blank stares. The kids used to tell me how creepy the stares she used to give. I seen it myself a couple of times. But while this was going on, the normal person still there, out sort of comes in, this other thing cuts in, and it's back and forwards. But majority of her, she was still there at this time. And then... yeah, sort of. It just gradually went on. Then one day, it was the 13th of January, 2016. After all this, it's probably a lot more. I've skipped, but the flies vanished after going on just over a year. Every day of flies swarming the house, they just disappeared out of the blue, gone. And 3 days later, then she disappeared. And, when I found her, she was a totally different person after, what happened after that.
How long was she gone for?
Just under 6 months.
Oh, wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So leading up to this, I had, for years, I had dreams about her being raped and stuff. And I used to get up in the morning, wouldn't be talking. She goes, "What you say? What's wrong with you?" And I couldn't tell her. Well, these dreams that used to come about her being raped and stuff. And yeah, it was pretty hard. But yeah, she was gone for 6 months. And in that 6 months, she was basically, someone she knew when she was younger lured her away, and he was just a piece of dirt, really is lower than dirt, and he basically drugged her, raped her, tortured her, and yeah, and then tried to kill her. When she left...
That's terrible. I'm so sorry all of that happened.
Yeah, it's all on the ridge. He threatened to kill... He just didn't want her. He wanted my daughters as well, especially my youngest. And he threatened to rape them, cut their throats in front of her and all the rest. And he sent three lots of people up to try and carry those threats out. When I was at the hospital and when twice up in the house here and down the hospital.
And possessed wife was with this gentleman the entire time?
Most of the time until basically beat her so badly that sort of brought her old self started coming out. Started coming back slowly. When she went missing, we didn't even know where she was. She was just gone, no note, nothing. She done some really sort of terrible stuff. She was in control of all the finances. We were basically going to be homeless. We had no money. We had nothing. The day she left, the death threat started coming in, started just saying stuff that just never happened. My kids went into bat for me there and all the rest. It was so bizarre. She was totally the opposite person that she always had been. I've been with her for 25 years by this stage, so I knew her pretty well. The day she left, I said to the kids, I said she's going to be dead within 6 months. And that basically came true, basically, almost.
How were you feeling at this time? Because, I mean, 25 years to lose your partner because they've become possessed and they've gone with the most terrible people that anyone could imagine. I can only imagine how you would have felt at that time.
Well, yeah, it was a bit hard. Later on, especially what we discovered, me and my son were supposed to be murdered on the 9th of December. That was all arranged, set up with this. It was all arranged and set up. That's all I can go into about that. Finding that out a bit later and all the rest of the stuff, it was just absolutely devastating. But I knew there was more to the story. It wasn't straightforward because it just wasn't her. It just, there was nothing, it was just not her at all. And my children, the strange thing is when she disappeared, there was a really strange peace and calm in the house after all this activity. It was really strange.
So you think whatever was evil or... I guess the negativity of that house, do you think that potentially attached itself to her?
Oh, it was inside of her, big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was controlling her.
So at what point did you realise that your wife was possessed?
It wasn't until she disappeared, then we started getting the strange messages, and then she saw the messages and all this, and personality, and we've seen the extent of the personality change, but it wasn't until I found her 6 months later when she started coming back to herself that I realised how bad it really was.
What do you say to people who think a possession might be something that's all within a person's head?
Mental illness, yeah, something I've run through my head so many times. Yeah, there's a fine line between it, but it can't explain the activity that went on. Doctors have found no cause for what happened to her. They can't find nothing. They know something happened to her, but there's no cause. She doesn't have any memories of that 6 months. She knows she went to hospital. She doesn't know why.
She has no memory for 6 months.
Nope. What happened to her? No memories.
Oh, gone. Wow.
She knows because she's got scars on her neck. Yeah, when I get to that part of the story. she has no memories, right? Another thing that you look for is the incredible strength. I mean, when someone's like this, the strength is unbelievable. What I've seen her do, which I'll get into the last in the rest of the story. And another thing is when there's a priest that walked into the hospital room one day and he didn't do nothing wrong. He was just in there talking, and we're looking out the window, looking, admiring the view, looking back towards Sydney Harbour and all the rest. We're in Concord. We're pretty high up in the building, and I could. She was had just one of those colouring books. She couldn't sort of do much at that stage, and the look on her face, and she's getting more and more aggravated because this priest was in the room, and I'm going, oh God, what am I going to do here? Because I after seeing what I've seen and her strength, I thought she's going to lose her shit and it's going to get ugly in here real quick.
So how strong did she become after becoming possessed?
Oh, let's tell you the rest of the story for that part. Do you want me to jump ahead and tell you about that or just continue with the story?
No, well, let's continue because I don't want to take away from, I guess, the situation. So... we'll get to that.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so she disappeared. She basically disappeared, and we didn't know where she was for a while until we tracked her down, and we started getting the death threats and all the rest. There's a lot of what happened in between. There's so much detail I can go into. That story in itself without the paranormal stuff would interest a lot of people. About how we tracked her down and all the rest of it, and what I'd done to keep her safe, and at the same time we had to destroy her. Basically, we absolutely had to destroy her, and that's what me and my son set out to do, and we achieved it because we had to make her hit rock bottom. That's the only way to bring them back.
And do you think that's do you think that just makes them realise where home is when there's nothing else left?
Yeah, and we also had to do that to protect my daughter from her own mother as well, and my other daughter. We had no choice, so we had to do what we had to do. But by doing what we did, it was enough to get things started, basically, for her to come back. And all the rest of it. Yeah.
So did you feel throughout the 6 months that the things that you were doing, could you feel that you were starting to have little wins?
Yeah. He threatened to kill us and my son and my daughters and all the rest, threat after threat. He bragged to me, this is a relevant little point. He bragged to me about being best buddies with that fellow who put the girl in the suitcase, the 3-year-old and murdered the mother. He bragged to me that was his cellmate and his best mate, and you'd see how that ties in. I'll explain how that ties in later. Basically, and he threatened us and all the rest. So me and my son, my son's an adult. We sat there and we took this, and then we turned it around on them. We made them scared of us, basically. I got inside of his head. I had him believe I was following him, had him believe I was outside of his house, constantly watching him and waiting for him. and he panicked, basically. And then we started having winds there with Adsol stuff. It's, yeah, I'd only wish I could go right into detail about some of the stuff we've done there. But, yeah. Anyway, eventually, you know, we had the death threats and all the rest of it and strange messages constantly. I knew it was her because I'd ask her stuff, only she would know. And it wasn't easy questions at all. They're not even average questions. They were very, very hard questions to answer if you didn't know something personally yourself. And, yeah, so it was a cat and mouse game. We had to make him believe that we didn't want nothing to offer. We didn't want to. Because if he had any inkling that we wanted to back and or trying to protect her, he would have tried harder to keep her, basically.
So after 6 months, what was the point where she... Well, I don't know. Did she decide to come home or was there an event that happened that led you to her?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, what happened was we basically gave up hope there for a while. We just gave up. My daughters used to, you know, people ask about the mother. My daughter used to say she was dead, basically. Tell people she was dead, she died, if anyone asked about her. One day... We're putting up all of this stuff where the death threats coming left, right, and centre. And just really weird stuff was still going on in the house. We still had activity in the house as well, but it wasn't as frequent or as full on as it was. And after 6 months, we just gave up. We just gave up. There's no help. You know, there's no manual on this sort of thing. The doctors don't even know what happened. There's just nowhere to turn to go, hey, is this happening? What do we do? What do we expect? There's nothing. So she called us after 6 months, and I just wouldn't talk to her. And I just went, nah, we don't want nothing to do with you. Then after a while, I started to see it was her. It was more her than this other thing coming back. So me and my son, we thought it was a setup to try and kill us again. So we went, travelled down New South Wales to see her. And we seen her and she was just absolutely thrilled to see us both. But she was still half and half. And I asked her, I said, what happened? I said, what happened? And she said, I can't remember. I said, you don't remember going down or getting down there? She says, no, I don't remember any of it. And I asked all these questions and she just kept saying, I don't remember it. I don't remember any of it. And I said to her, I said, well, what point did you start to remember? And she said, when he got me and absolutely beat me in one of the beatings. He had already, I was sitting in the lounge room in this period of time one night and I said, I just had this overwhelming feeling something bad happened. And I said to the kids, I think your mum's dead. We later found out he actually choked her until she stopped breathing and needed to be revived. And, yeah, I'm leaving out the parts about the knife to the throat and all the rest of it. You know, there's so much more I could be telling you about this guy and what he done to her. Anyway, we went down there and me and my son stayed there because we weren't sure if we were being set up to be murdered again or not. So I ended up staying with her at her mother's place. And I was sleeping by her side, you know, in the bed separate by her side, and she'd just be up all night. She wouldn't sleep, still wouldn't sleep, and she'd just be up all night. Just, I can't describe it. We'd look on her face, fidgeting constantly. So we decided to bring her back to Queensland and see my daughter, and my daughter was not happy to see her at all after, you know, mother basically just vanished in the middle of the night.
Was your daughter aware of the... I guess the paranormal situation that was going on with her?
Yeah, we all suspected it. We all suspected it. We even to this day we talk to her about, you know, you're possessed and, you know, and all the rest. we're still talking. She just says, I don't really remember it, any of it. Yeah.
Even to this day?
Even to this day, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
She doesn't remember it, and she doesn't remember her mother. She doesn't remember siblings, family, none of those people, good friends of ours, never knew. Our good friends were absolutely shocked when I told them what happened. They could not believe it. They thought we were just pulling their leg about her disappearing. It wasn't until they spoke to my youngest daughter, because they all know and love her, that they really hit home about what had happened and why she was missing. And it was just a shock to everyone, absolute shock, because it was such a different person. She would never associate with people like this or go near them, and didn't particularly, avoided them.
So how's your wife now? Because have you got a priest over? Have you done an exorcism or anything like that on your wife?
No, I've done nothing like that. Nothing at all. She's pretty much back to normal. There are some differences, but pretty much back to normal.
Do you feel that she's still possessed?
Million-dollar question. Is it laying there dormant or gone? I don't know. I can't answer that.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I have no idea, because we've still got activity in the house. We've still got the bad thing. Lucas moved last Thursday, first time in 2.5 years. I just don't know.
And do you think that's because you've had a conversation about him?
Oh, Luca. That was a weird day. I'll tell you what happened. The night before, I had this weird dream, and I was telling my wife and my daughter in the car, and we were just laughing about it. I dreamt that Luca came. We went for a drive, and we had Luca with us for some weird reason. And I went in and duck into see my son, and as I was ducking in, my wife screamed out, "Can I get back to the car, quick!" I get back, and Luca was alive, and we were laughing about this. And I said to Luca, I said, "Why don't you move anymore?" He said, "I'm just shy." And I said, "Yeah, I know." And then he went still again. I'm like, "Luke, are you still alive?" He said, "Yeah, I'm alive. I'm still here. I always have been." I said, "Are you going to move on camera one day?" He said, "Yeah, I'm going to do it for you." He said, "I'm going to start moving from now on." And we were just pissed ourselves laughing in the car. We thought, great joke. And later on that day, we went out, and I'm driving in a different car. And I had my wife in the car, and we're just driving back from Brisbane, and I'm talking about going back to New South Wales. And as soon as I said that, the stereo stitches to navigation, and my music dropped out. I'm going, "What the hell?" And we're like fighting with the stereo. We put it back on music and goes back to navigation, and then we just turned it off. Anyway, later on that night, one thing about Luca in that dream was he was really bubbly and happy. He was very bubbly and happy. I went to bed a little bit earlier, and Luca's in a spot where everyone can see him. You can't get near him, basically, without being seen. The cameras are on him, but the movement activated, and he still managed to move without that. And I checked on him. I was looking at him. I'm going, "Geez," because people swear the expression on his face changes. Now, I've had so many people tell me that, and I'm looking at him going, "Geez, he looks extra happy tonight." He's like real, real smirky, like, giggly type of thing. And I went to bed, and I'm in bed, and I'm barely gone to sleep like 10 minutes later, and next minute I hear my wife sing out to me, he's waking me up and said, "Did you touch Luca?" I'm like, "No, he's moved." I'm like, "Yeah, okay." I honestly thought we were talking about maybe maybe moved a centimetre or something stupid like that. I get out there and my daughter is the one that actually found him, and he's moved his head 90 degrees.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely huge move. And I'm like, bloody hell, Luca. So I just, you know, I'm just so used to it. Took the pictures what I normally do, and I just put him back the way he was. Whether he's going to move again, I don't know. That's to remain to be seen. Yeah.
So have you ever thought of perhaps removing Luca from the situation to see if things change?
Not really, because Luca wasn't with us for the 17-odd years or whatever it was leading up to it with all the activity. He wasn't even with us. So very unlikely any of it's Luca. Very unlikely.
It's just a weird coincidence that he happens to be a possessed or haunted doll and you have this activity going on in your life.
Yeah, because the activity predates him by about 17 years.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, yeah, it predates him. It's like I said before, I don't think he's anything bad. Animals love him, you know. And I've literally walked in and seen one of our cats with him in a bear hug smooching to his face. our dogs love him, you know. I don't think there's anything sinister about him. I've wondered about it because I did get the recordings near him of that little girl screaming for 4 minutes straight near him, and then the whistle. It was actually that whistle that I recorded twice in one night. I've heard it and I only recorded it twice in one night. It was actually a tune I taught my baby Rosella when I was 16, and I can't even whistle it as good as whatever whistled that. I can't even do it that good.
That's incredible. That's incredible. It's like it has this almost insider knowledge of you and your family.
Yeah. Well, with the story, I'll get back to it because there's a bit of that related to that. But when we brought my wife back up here, that was interesting. We literally got up here and the car started playing up on the way home. It was running really, really bad. And we're at somewhere like, I think it was Gunnedah or something we're coming through, and we've got to come to North Brisbane. And the car, by the time I got home, the car broke down in the driveway. It literally broke down. As I pulled up, it broke down and wouldn't start.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I said to my wife, I had a hell of a time trying to fix it. I said to my wife, something doesn't want you to go back. And she said, I'm going to catch a bus back there or whatever. She wanted to go back to her mother's place in Narromine, basically. This thing still had a hold of her and was still controlling her. There was a bit of a fight going on. This thing was still trying to put her in harm's way, basically, and using him to do it as well. And so we got the car. She stayed up here for about, I think it was about 4 days or something. We drove. I finally got the car. I had a hell of a time getting this car running. It's never played up since. And we drove down there. And on the way down there, I'm literally in the middle of the night. I hit this black mass in the middle of the road. It just formed out of midair and nowhere. And of the shape of a person. And it just went poof, disappeared. That was at the back of my other favourite spot, the Pillar Gap, which I bloody hate. Yeah, so I sort of took that as something did not want us going down there again. But anyway, I took her back down there and she decided to stay at her mum's for a bit longer because she's still half and half. And while I was down there, something, you know, this bad thing came out in her and I ended up coming back to Queensland. I came back here and about 2 days later, the one that bashed her and all that came to the house with friends. I to this day think they were looking for me, and they took her.
Really?
And she was missing, yeah. Held her hostage. And at the time, we thought she got into the car willingly. And so we thought, so we just wrote her off once again. Now, in this time she was missing, we're contacting police, everything. Police were informed and all the rest of it. And I was talking to detectives that know this nice little chap, whatever you want to call him. I've got other names, but I can't say it on here. And, yeah, sorry, I've lost my train of thought. So she was missing and we couldn't find a trace of it. We couldn't get hold of her. We couldn't get nothing at all. So we'd done the one thing that everyone reckons you shouldn't do. We got a Ouija board.
Oh, no.
To us it didn't matter. I've never touched a Ouija board in my life, nor have my kids, and we've gone through what difference is it going to make? And it didn't make any difference, to be honest. And some of the answers we got from there, we used the Ouija board. Some of the answers I've had from there, I've had no good, only evil is one of them. It did tell us where she basically was. It did say she'll come back home, she'll come back to Queensland, she'll go to hospital, come back to Queensland, and go to jail. That did happen. But the jail part's totally different to what you think. The hospital happened, the Queensland happened, the jail, we went to Boggo Road Jail months afterwards. So technically it did happen. But yeah. Finally, we asked this thing. We kept asking, what do you want, basically? And it keeps talking about bloodlines. It's your bloodline, your bloodline. And we're going, people think these things don't work. Well, it depends on who's using these things and where you're using them at, you know? But all it does is it just kept raving on about our bloodline. And it kept saying, do you know what you are? Do you know what you are? And I'm like, what? It keeps going, medium, medium. I'm going, yeah, bud, sure, okay.
It's saying you're a medium.
Yeah, saying I am, which is exactly what the head of one of the paranormal groups who, when I first met him, he had worked with the police on cold cases and everything. When I met him, I shook his hand. He said to me, you're a medium. I'm going, am I? He said, yeah, you are. I can feel it. You know, I said to him, okay, you know, whatever. You know, I'm not a big believer in any of that. Sort of, I am and I aren't. Oh, it's hard to describe. And by this time, when she was missing, I bought another car because I had to sell off my Pontiac. So I needed another car to be able to travel New South Wales. And in this time, I had a dream that I was driving at the back of Bathurst with her in the car and together in this car I just bought. And I thought, oh, this is just crazy. I woke up and I thought it was true. And it was absolutely crazy. And, yeah, that came true when I drove her back from the hospital. Yeah.
So you think you had a premonition there?
I don't like being called psychic, and I definitely hate being called gifted. I hate it. When anyone says they're gifted, I'm going, oh, that's another show. If, you know, some of the shit I've found over the years and stumbled across over the years and stuff like that, you don't want to know about gifted. I can't say that, but gifted is not a word I'd use.
Yeah.
Anyone who says it, you know, they're full of it, as far as I'm concerned. It's just like I'm not a fan of all these social media psychics and all this. They're sitting there bragging about this and this and this, and it's like, yeah, okay, I think you're full of it. I don't know if you read those screenshots that I sent you with the dates months before talking about her going to hospital and going to visit the hospital. There's no one leading up to this. Years I talk about heavy breathing next to me when I'm asleep, keeping me awake. All that came true. But that's sort of further in the story. But, yeah, anyway, she was missing and we didn't know where to find her. We're really good at tracking this offender. We could flush him out anywhere, but this time we could not track him. We didn't know where he was, and we sort of gave up hope because we heard that she had got in the car willingly. There's a lot more to the story that I can sort of let on here. Another part again that I haven't even told you about. And so we just gave up hope. It was going on 3 weeks. She was missing. And I remember I went out one night and I pulled up a survey And here's a bloke with a tattoo, pulls up next to me in a tattoo with her last name on his neck. I'm going, oh, it's got to be a coincidence. I'm going, bloody hell. So I jump in the car to go down the shopping centre, and then comes on the radio on her favourite song. You know, the song we used to listen to when we first got together, Bryan Adams, I'll Do Anything, I think it is. And I'm going, oh, this is just getting beyond bullshit. Oh, sorry. Then I went to the shopping centre, walk in there, and then there's a song. I can't say the song, but it's actually a song with her name in it as the main chorus. And by this stage, I'm going, oh, this is just bloody, it's just getting crazy. So I went home. I've had enough. So, yeah, the next day, like, things were getting pretty bad by this time. We had police looking for him, to try and find her and all the rest. And by this time was my oldest daughter's birthday. And my son came home, he put a bag on the table, right in the middle of a dining table. It weighed about 10 kilos, had a lot of stuff in there. And I'm sitting there with my two daughters in the lounge and my son. We're playing, they were just playing the Xbox. It was her birthday, trying to take their minds off things. And all of a sudden, this heavy bag launched off the table and come crashing down and landed about 3 to 4 feet away from the table, away from the middle of the table. And we looked and we just looked and going, not again. I think it was this thing's way, something in the house was telling me to get off my ass and do something. So we got to working later on that night. We thought we exhausted every avenue. Every single avenue. Anyway, I got an idea. We hacked her Google account, and then we went into tracking services. And we got really lucky because it wasn't easy to hack. And once we done that, luckily it was switched on. We got all the data and could see where she'd been for the last 3 weeks and where they were currently were now. So we straight away, we had his phone number because we found that earlier on in the piece, because there's a lot of the story I sort of can't tell on here. And we start sending messages. We tracked him, basically we tracked him to Dubbo Sewage Works, which is, there's a reason for that. So I only found out, if you dump a body in that sewage pit, they can't retrieve it. It's impossible for them to get the body. We also tracked him to a place outside of Nowra, Wombat Flats. It's all this, which is not far from Belengalo, it's just interesting. You know, it's about probably half hour, 40 minutes from Belengalo by the looks of it on the map, and all the rest. And from that, we'll be able to tell he's planning the killer. And then what happened was he'd been holding the hostage, and then he was travelling. He said he was going to take her home. So he started driving her home. He got probably about, I don't know, a K from her house driving through Narromine. And then she overheard him talking about there was him in the car, his ex-wife, two adult daughters, and I'm not sure if there was another person, and she was in the front seat. And they were driving through Narromine, and she heard him talking about planning the killer. They were going to steal her ID, collect payments for her. And this is where it comes in. His cellmate was the one that got caught with that little girl and the mother, the one in the little girl in the suitcase. That's what he tried to do. This is where he got the idea from. Except he stuffed up. They were going to find. They found their bodies. They weren't meant to find hers.
Oh,
They already taken a house out in her name. In Warren, I think it was Dubbo Street in Warren, they were going to head there and stay there. They already started to get stuff in her name, so she overheard it. Now, she's had two knee reconstructions on one knee, and the other knee they opens up and said that we can't do nothing because cartilage is so bad. But anyway, she jumped from a moving car doing 60 k's an hour, going through town and ran.
Really?
Yeah, ran. This is where the incredible strength starts to come in. There's more to come yet. And as she jumped out, they can't confirmed this to me. I've shown doctors the pictures when I was in hospital. Two have said, I showed her a picture on the neck. Well, she jumped out. One of them managed to stick a syringe in her neck, basically. And she jumped out. Other than that, she no injuries, no nothing. And I was up here at the time. I was getting prepared to go down there to go looking for her. And she rang me up the phone. She could barely breathe, and she's telling me he's planning to come up to kill the kids. He's planning to come up after me and all the rest. I said, "Yeah, okay." I just told her to settle down. I said, "I'll handle things up here." We were all prepared. When all this happened, I took my daughter down to the farm and I taught her some life skills that to prepare her for any of this. I can't sort of go into that what it was, but I'll leave that to your imagination. Anyway, so she jumped from the car and she ran and she warned us about that. Within a day, she got a lump on the side of her neck and I kept nagging her to go to the doctor, She didn't want to go because she was just so shaken. She didn't want to leave the house.
So after your wife escaped the vehicle, did she come back to you?
No, she ran to her mother's house. I was still in Queensland.
Okay.
Yep, and I was still in Queensland at the time. And the lump started getting bigger and bigger. I was talking to her. I was talking to her on the phone. I'd talk to her, and she just kept saying, "It's getting more and more powerful. I said, "Go to the doctor. You need to go to the doctor." And she did. They put her on antibiotics, and then it just within 3 days, I lost contact with her. Didn't know what happened to her. I later found out the lump got so big that she had to be rushed to hospital. And when she walked in, she basically collapsed and stopped breathing.
Oh wow!
Anyway, the lump got bigger and bigger. And I lost contact with her, and she was in Narromine Hospital. I kept nagging the family, "Where is she? Why haven't I heard nothing? Where is she?" And they wouldn't tell me nothing until one of them cracked and told me she's in Dubai getting tests done. And I later found out they took her in for a scan, and when they injected her with a dye, her heart stopped beating again, and this time she was gone for about 2 to 3 minutes before they revived her.
Oh, wow.
At this point, I basically went and seen a mate because I had no money left at the mate because I was absolutely drained after his trip to Dubai, and I borrowed $150 and I jumped in the car. I just drove. At first I was heading for Dubai, so I started heading out towards Warwick. 3 hours in the trip, around about the time she died, so it turns out, I had a black figure appear in the car next to me, and it absolutely scared the shit out of me because it caught me off guard, and I end up swerving and locking the brakes on and skidding into the grass on the side of the road, narrowly missing trees. And after that, I drove for, I think it was 16 hours straight on. I think I had 20 minutes of sleep. I stopped for 20 minutes nap. Because I rang the Dubbo Base Hospital because no one was telling me nothing, no one. And they were frankly ringing around looking for the next of kin because the family said, "We'll be the next of kin." And then they literally lived a 5-minute walk from the hospital and just didn't give a shit about her. So as soon as I rang them, I told them who I was. They said, "You're the next of kin now," and all the rest, "We're putting you down." I said, "Yep, okay." And they said, "We're going to airlift her."
Where did they airlift her to?
From Dubbo Base Hospital to Concord, the repatriation hospital there. They handle cases like hers. The stuff, basically stuff they just infectious diseases, whatever they have no idea what's doing it. That's where they send them.
And when she got there, did they find anything unusual about this lump on her neck?
No, they didn't know what was going on at all. They didn't have any idea. Yeah. What happened, I drove, like after I drove 16 hours straight, I basically went in there. They went front desk, asked about her, and they said, yep, I see you. The intensive care unit.
Do you think that this thing on her neck was somehow connected to her possession?
I don't know. I honestly think she got a syringe stuck in her neck. I've got a picture of the punch mark. I just don't know. I don't know about that part. I wouldn't have a clue. I've never really put much thought into it, but it was huge. They didn't know what it was. And basically I went in there, asked about her, and asked for a social worker, asked to see her, and I just collapsed because I was just so tired. And she arrived roughly about 10 minutes before I did. Because I'd been waiting on a bed, and to organise a helicopter and make sure she was stable enough. So I basically went in there. She was conscious, pretty normal, and she just said, "Put me in charge of everything." And then they basically put her in an induced coma. Now, while she was in this induced coma, she was sort of, I don't know, they had trouble waking her up, and after it, to wake her up, she'd have really violent outbursts in there, and then they had to strap her down to the bed. When I was talking about an incredible strength, I'm talking about there were more than one instance where we had to pin her down. There was three of us one time and we struggled to pin her down, and there was five of us another time and we still had trouble pinning down, even though she was strapped down. I witnessed her single-handedly. A nurse had to get to her IV because she'd always try to rip her IVs out, always try to rip them out. They had to stitch them in, had to change something. So they had to undo one strap of her arm, and the nurse was there. She was asleep. She was out to it. Nothing much was happening. The nurse touched the IV. She grabbed the nurse roughly about where your pants line would be, one-handed, and literally lifted her off the ground.
Oh, my goodness.
This nurse was pushing her down, all the weight, had all the weight on her, pushing her down. And she was on her tippy toes, and she started to go a bit further than tippy toes. She's lifting. I seen it. I ran over there and dived on her arm with all my weight. Like, the only reason I got down because I hit her with such force to make her arm go down. And we had to restrain her. She'd thrash about, kicking and all the rest, but she couldn't talk at this stage because they had put a tube down the throat, so she couldn't say nothing. And this went on for nearly... I was in the intensive... Stayed at the hospital for 6 weeks. Most of that was in an intensive care unit. It was the longest stay in the intensive care unit they usually have. They later told me they weren't expecting her to make it. General stay in an intensive care unit, 3 days. You either go in, get better, or you don't. You come out dead. But I watched her throw these nurses around like rag dolls. I nearly got kicked in the head a couple of times, because I had to... They can't leave a patient strapped in all the time. You only can do it for so often. I don't know, some law, some whatever. So they can only restrain it partially or not fully for all the time. And I remember walking up to her and she tried to kick me in the head. I pulled my head back and felt the force of the kick go straight past my face.
Oh, wow.
Now, when she got out of the hospital, when she got past this stage later on, she ended up having a trachee put in after a while. When I got there, I told her, I said, you're going to need a trachee. So she was prepared for that. And in this stage, she was alternating between this whatever it was and herself. It was alternate. There was like it was a battle going on inside of her. It was just incredible. While I was there, I seen about 6 people die. Seen a couple of bodies, which is, yeah. When you watch those ER shows and you know how the alarms go off and they go running?
Yeah.
The alarms aren't like that. They're very soft tone. And you know when they die because they go running, and then if that curtain gets drawn, it does get open, and they walk away very quietly, you know they're gone. We had the crash cart right in front of us, so we know when they grabbed it. And after a while, she had 9 lots of surgery, wasn't expected to make it. She didn't even respond to any medication for over 3 weeks in the hospital. They didn't know what was wrong with her. I found the puncture mark on her neck, and I showed 3 or 4 doctors. One wouldn't comment, and the other nurses and doctors said, that's a puncture mark. But they weren't allowed to state it officially. And there's another reason why he was trying to kill her, because when he raped her, she made a complaint. He was looking at 10 years jail, and he was going to court, and he did not want to go into court to testify against him. She was on lockdown on the hospital. You could not ring up about her. She was not, if you even asked about her on the front desk, there was no record of her being there. Only people that knew that, that could talk to her were me or the police. That was it. Not that the police could talk to her with the state she's in. She couldn't talk with the tracking and all the rest. And then after a while, after she got out, if I hadn't left anything out, after the incredible strength watching these nurses get thrown around were unbelievable. Then she'd switch to herself and have no memory of what just happened at all. There was nothing. So she'd go from throwing the nurses around, absolute violent and all that. They had the sedator, and they had the sedation turned up so high to try and knock her out, and it wasn't working.
Oh, really?
And then they just had to strap her down and let her thrash until she virtually passed out or changed or whatever, until she came back to normal. When she came back to normal, sometimes it could be just a couple of minutes. I'm going, do you remember what just happened? She says, no, I've been asleep. I don't remember. I had a piece of paper on there. Had a piece of paper there. And she'd write it down for me. She'd just write it down. When she started to respond, for such a long time when she was in there. And then she's seen the paddles and the crash cart. She's pointing to it, and she's pointing to herself. And I said, what? And she wrote it down. She said, that happened to me. I said, no, it didn't, because I never knew about what happened to Dubbo Base at that time. She said, it happened to me. I said, no, they didn't use it on you. And then it later came out when she could talk again after the trachee. She said, when I died, she said that I floated above my body.
So she had an out-of-body experience.
Oh, yeah. She, not the first time, the second time in Dubbo Base. And she said, that's what they done to me. She said, I floated. I watched the doctors work on me. And she said, then I went into a bright light. She said, my grandmother was there, and my grandfather. She said, but the difference was they were in their 80s when they died, and they were only like 32. And she said, there was a boy and girl there. And she didn't know who they were until the boy was a bit shy. He was standoffish in the background until the girl ran up to her and cuddled her and called her mum.
Oh, wow.
And said her name. Turns out the 2 children were the 2 that we lost, miscarried. And they would have been the age they would have been when they were alive and had the names.
That's a really beautiful experience that she got to have there.
Yeah. Basically, she said she stayed with them. She said it felt like for just ages she was up there, ages. So there's like she was there for weeks. And then her grandmother said to her, she was really close to her grandma, You have to go back. You got to make things right with your family. And then she said she remembered being back in a body.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how she told me to happen. Now, another thing that happened, she went into the white light. She had been born with a cyst on her brain. It was a ticking time bomb. another grandmother of hers many years ago on the father's side, different grandmother, died because the thing just ruptured, killed her instantly while down the line. We've known about it for since 2000. I think they found it in about 2000. We were supposed to check it every 6 months and we didn't want to. We just didn't want to know because it was inoperable. And last, before she disappeared, I think we finally gave in. We checked it about 12 months before that and it was still there. That's the last I think we've seen of it. When I went to the hospital, they were asking me a medical history and I was telling them about the knee reconstructions, all the rest of it. And I said she's got a cyst on the brain. So when they done the scans, they went looking for the cyst of the brain. They couldn't find it.
You're kidding.
And we thought, no, I'm not. We thought they missed it. So when she came back, after she left the hospital, I'm jumping ahead again, such a complex story. We're up in Queensland again. We took her to a regular doctor. So he ordered the scans looking for the cyst on the brain. It wasn't there. They couldn't find it. It had gone.
That's incredible. That's a miracle.
Yeah, they have no explanation. It was inoperable. It's not something that goes away. It was like a genetic thing. But it's gone. There's no trace of it. And they're at a loss to explain it. After we got it, after she was sort of getting better, and that's when we were moved to ward for a few days, and that's when she seen the priest and got upset. She was still switching back and forwards there, but she was more herself than she was this other thing. It was slowly fading out again, but going back to normal.
So
yeah.
How is your wife doing now? Do you think she's recovered from the... from the possession? Do you think she may still be possessed? Is this something that you're slowly starting to live with, or is it something that you're looking to get help with?
Well, I've tried to get help. See, the medical possession profession don't know what's wrong with her, and the other side of it, there are no people in Australia that can help with it. You've got a lot of people that claim they can help, but when it comes down to crunch, they don't really know what they're doing. They're not qualified.
Have you considered reaching out overseas to see if there's people who maybe...
I've tried. And all I come across are people that want me to pay $600 for them and do something over the internet. You know, it's just crazy. They're just all rip-offs and con artists, basically.
Yeah.
I've approached the church. When I went in church, that was the most funniest thing you'd ever see. I went in the church. I had copies on my laptop of everything happened with Luca. And I went to my daughter and we sat down with this priest. And he said, "What can I do for you?" I said, "What do you know about demons?" And he said to me, he said, "I help people fight the inner demons all the time." I said, "Oh, okay." I said, What about real demons?" He said, "What do you mean?" And I played videos of some of the captures in the house with Luca and the knocking and being. He went white as a ghost and he had to leave the room. He was shaken big time.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was shaking big time. He was blessing the computer and all the rest of it. And he said, "I'll bless you if you want." I said, "Don't you dare. Don't bless any of us."
Wow.
Because at the end of the day, this thing, it will retaliate against us.
Yeah.
It's happened before. It got upset me when I brought my old Bible back into the house and my crucifix. It got real upset me. Yeah, a bit of hell broke loose with that. That was, we've tried to get help and all the rest of it. There's just no one who deals with it, let alone believes in it. Like I said, the difference between mental illness is the incredible strength. When you see them do the incredible strength and they've got no memory of anything that happens and you got the lead up to activity, especially the flies, I hate to say this, you've got a possession.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if you don't have any of that, good chance you've got mental illness.
And that's, you know? it's a really fair observation as well, because there's a lot of things that happen in, I guess, in these different circumstances, but you've had a lot of quantifiable things of, you're ticking off the boxes of what you would expect from a possession. And I guess the superhuman strength is almost the final thing that kind of ticks that box for you of, this is undeniable possession on your behalf.
It took over 6 months for her to learn to walk again because she was so weak. She couldn't walk after getting out of that bed. 6 months. She was so weak, she couldn't walk. She couldn't walk, you know, like even 20 metres without being puffed. I had to literally have her hanging off my shoulder to walk from the car into the shopping centre. And we had to rest several times. And yet she was able to lift nurses up and fling them around like rag dolls. I'm not talking about, you know, we just jumped on her and pinned her down. We jumped on her legs and arms and we were lifted. You know, I weighed 112 kilos and she lifted me with ease jumping on her leg. And some of these other nurses were pretty big girls. They were into sports and, you know, and the way she flung us around like we were nothing, we struggled to pin her down and tie her down. And then the drugs to try and get her to sedate her and were full up. They couldn't give her any more. And I asked one of the nurses, I said, what's the go with this? And she said, oh, it's just a reaction to the drugs. I'm going, yeah, okay. I don't know. But if these are reactions to the drugs, we should be giving these to our athletes. Because they really, you know, even to our military, the shit I've seen with it, it's, it was just unbelievable what I witnessed, and even the nurses were blown away how much strength she had. It was crazy, you know.
It's a really fascinating story, Glenn, and, you know, I really do. I want to take a moment to thank you for sharing it. And the fact that it goes over two stories is a real testament to the life that you've lived, the life that your wife has lived. And, I mean, these amazing and terrible things that your family has lived through, it's such an incredible story.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I haven't even got to the part about the most freakiest thing I've ever seen in the house, and that happened after all this.
Well, look, I do believe we have a little bit of time left, so I reckon we could sneak it in.
All right. Okay, this is – people often ask me what's the most – freakiest thing ever happened. Forget the flies, the scratching, all that stuff and moving objects. I was about 6 months after this happened, I was sitting at the kitchen table. My wife was in our ensuite getting ready. My daughter was in another room ready to go out. Anyway, my son, he said, I'm going down the shopping centre. And I said, he walked past me. I said, yeah, no worries, I'll catch you later. I heard him go out. Door closed because I had my headphones on. I was looking at the computer. You know, I could still hear because I don't have my headphones turned up that loud. And then I heard the car go and he left. Not 2 minutes later, he walked back inside. And I looked up at him. I said, I thought you just went out. And he just had this blank stare on his face. And he didn't answer me. And he walked into the lounge room. Anyway, my wife comes out and says, all right, we're going to go now. I said, yeah, okay. I said, do you want to ask my son if he wants to come? And she said, he's not here. I said, yes, he is. I said, he's just walked past me. I just spoke to him. She's going, no, he's not here. I said, he's in the lounge room. And my daughter came out and said, no, he's not here. I said, I was arguing with him. I said, he just walked, you don't understand, I just spoke to him. Anyway, I walked into the lounge room. He wasn't there.
You're gone. Kidding.
And later on, we went down to the shopping centre and I ran into him and his girlfriend down there. I said to him, did you come home before? He said, no, I've been gone since I said goodbye to you. And I've gone, oh my, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. Another, what do you call them? Double ganger? And yeah, it's stuff like that that really, really has you questioning your sanity.
It really would. That's the stuff that really plays tricks on your mind and it makes you really want to question everything that you experience then.
Yeah, it does. I've gone to the doctor. I've been checked out. I've thought I was going crazy with all this stuff, all the premonitions, you know, like I said, she'd be dead in 6 months. Yeah, she pretty much was at all. And all this stuff, it's been happening to me all my life and some of the stuff that I've stumbled across. Yeah, that might be another show one day. Some of the stuff that I've seen and predicted and all the rest of it. Yeah. I just want to ask you something.
Yeah, go for it.
If you don't mind. Would you mind if I posted a couple of the videos, say the captures from Luca, on your fan page so people can actually see what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely not. What we'll do, mate, is we'll actually include, and if you don't mind me doing this, is I'll include your videos, some of the pictures on the website where we keep your episode. Yeah. So that way there
people... Yeah, there you go. Yeah, just do that because it'd be a lot easier if they could hear the spirit box and hear the knocks in the night and all the rest of it. There's a few videos on there, and there's probably going to be some more you're going to go, what the hell? When you see them to, because since this has happened, we sort of go ghost hunts now and collect EVPs. We figure we've got nothing to lose, and we want to get evidence of this stuff because it just sounds so crazy. But, you know, so every now and then we go out and grab the EVP or try to and all the rest, and yeah. And it's just because, I don't know, we just figure, you know, we're going to live with it one way or another, so
yeah. Might as well. Might as well own it.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much try and understand
it. That's it. Well, Glenn, thank you for coming on the show, mate. I really do appreciate it, and I know the listeners are going to absolutely have, they're going to have so many questions for you, mate. So we'll...
If you ever want to... Sorry, if you ever want to do a live in... live show. I don't know where you're based, whether you need me or whatever. I'll come on there and talk live with you and answer questions. I'm quite happy to do it.
Yeah, that might be something we can definitely look at doing. It's we'll definitely keep that in the pipeline, I think.
But thanks for having me anyway. And yeah, there's so much more. There's probably another show I could probably talk to you on, just the other stuff that I've got on top of this again and in the house. Oh, it's just so much.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au. Or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/believeUFO radio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.